Blog Talk Radio.
Tonight is a particular honor for me because, let's face it, my presence on this stage is pretty unlikely. My father was a foreign student, born and raised in a small village in Kenya. He grew up herding goats, went to school in a tin roof shack. His father, my grandfather, was a cook.
Welcome to Current Events with Patrick Cook. I'm your host, Patrick Cook, coming to you live from Dallas, Texas, as I do every Sunday at 4 p.m. Central Time, 5 o'clock Eastern. We are the number one resource for small business and nonprofits. To learn how you can showcase your business or nonprofit, go to our website at TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com for details. Man, we have another great show in store for you today. So sound the alarm! Get on Facebook, Twitter, Foursquare, or Tumblr. Send out emails and text messages. Call your friends and family and tell them to tune in right now to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And for those of you that are listening via Blog Talk Radio, leave your comments. Click the follow button or follow me on Twitter, and that's at TaylorMade101. I'll be reading your tweets live on the air. And I also have a chat room open. Out there in the chat room, you can leave your comments or ask questions. So whatever your pleasure, chat room, Twitter, Facebook, or just plain old my bell, we want to hear from you. But first, let's take a look at the current events.
Greetings and salutations, everyone, and let me be the first to say Happy New Year. This year, we are celebrating New Year's in Phoenix, Arizona, and what a beautiful place this is, clear and sunny skies all around. And I would be remiss if I didn't send out a special shout-out to the Hurst family. Paula and Sonny will be celebrating their anniversary in a few days. We wish you a happy anniversary and many, many more. Now, today we'll have another great show in store for you, and as we pay homage to the ideals of Sankofa, we take a look back and really focus a keen eye on the stories of 2013. Now, as we do that, I would like the listening audience also to take an inward journey and ask themselves the questions. Did I set out to do the things that I planned, and did I move my cause a step further? This includes, of course, issues with respect to spirituality, financially, academically, and professionally. And so I want you to really take an inward journey and look at those issues and say, as I prepare for 2014, let me do an assessment of 2013. In the meantime, some of the key stories we'll be discussing will be the significance of President Obama's second term, race in America in the wake of the George Zimmerman verdict, Paula Deen, and the Duck Dynasty debacle. We look at the Pope's transition and pose the simple question. Does the new Pope's actions generate a smokescreen to the sex abuse scandals of the church? We look at Edward Snowden and the NSA. Is he a hero or a traitor? And much, much more. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. And, of course, the phone lines are open. Now, joining me in the studio is the executive producer of Current Events and the chief operating officer of Cook Enterprises. I introduce the son and present to others no other than Jima Hill Cook. Jima, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Well, let me be the first to extend you what I've extended to the listening audience, and that is a Happy New Year. Now, of course, this marks the end of our third year doing the show. So I would like to also say congratulations for bringing a broader perspective to the current events affecting our community.
Wow, it's been 3 years already? That's awesome.
Yes.
Thank you, and Happy New Year to you as well.
Started. Top of the list, of course, is what I mentioned earlier, the significance of President Obama's second term. So to kick the show off in our year review, how significant do you think the inauguration of President Obama for his second term is when you look at it in the broad scheme of things of the history of the United States and, more importantly, the history of African Americans in this country?
Well, first of all, I think the fact that we did get, of course, re-elected when we have our second inauguration shows the diversity of the nation. What it doesn't show is the complexity of the nation as well. So although we have made a lot of strides, there's so much more left to do that we can't just hang our hats on, okay, he got elected for a second time. That's number one. Number two, the inauguration in itself was a sight to behold in terms of some of the things that happened leading up to it, as well as some of the decisions you've made since then. We forget that that just happened in January of this year, that he was inaugurated for the second time. And so these last 12 months have been filled with so many accomplishments that he's made just in this 12-month period alone. So it's significant, like I stated, on levels in terms of the historical nature of it, but it also shows that the work that's left to do for us as not only just African-Americans, but as just a country. We've been hiding behind this illusion that we've gotten it all together. And what his presidency has shown us is that we don't have it all together, that race is still an issue, that people still are not comfortable talking about race, that people still act like we should get over certain parts of our history, and people still want to rewrite our history. And so, you know, the significance for African Americans is that he leveled the playing field for a moment in time, but the playing field, they keep changing the goalposts. So for that moment that he ran in 08 and won, that moment that he ran in 2012 and won, the playing field was level. He won on their terms, he played by their rules, he raised the money, and all of that. And as Jesse Jackson says all the time, when the rules are the same, we win. But, you know, they continue to change that, and we have to be quicker at adjusting our game plan based on the rules change. We have to anticipate that the rules are going to change and not sit back thinking that, oh, this is it, we've done it now. And so I think that's where we have a lot of work to do, and that we haven't fulfilled our true destiny because we're still, you know, living in that era of, okay, we made it, but now what?
You know, I want to take a look at something you said. And it's primarily associated with moving the country forward on race relations. And I want to talk specifically about an issue that this teacher was suspended for telling a teacher was telling a student we don't need another black president. So although we had a significant moment in our history, and not too long ago, we had this particular teacher going out and telling a student, we don't need another black president. I mean, have we really made any progress?
Well, that's what my point was, is that, you know, although his election was significant and it showed, you know, that people can come together and one vote really does count, it also showed the complexity of us as a nation and that we really have never dealt with race. We've never really dealt with the issue with black America and white America. We've covered it up by making statements around post-racial, and I'm not really sure whoever came up with that term, and that the election of one person in the seat of the presidency would change and undo all the, you know, years of ill that had happened to a race of people. That you still, I mean, even in your introduction, you talk about the fallout behind Bill Roberson from Duck Dynasty. I mean, for him to make the asinine statement that the people he was basically sharecropping with down in Louisiana, the black people, was alongside him hoeing and cooking cotton, singing their songs, and what happened. Who says that? How is somebody happy to be outside in the heat of the day, the cold of the day, picking cotton, making money for somebody else? I mean, they didn't get any money for that. So, you know, that, I mean, who would say that, and who would support somebody that said something like that to make it true, to act as though that's a true statement? And it goes back to Michelle Bachmann when she was running, talking about black families were better under slavery. Really? You know, so when you talk about, and now you have this teacher who tells a young African-American male student who says he wants to be president, oh, we don't need another black president. Really? So yes, we've come far, but we have so far to go. We're nowhere near where we really need to be. I mean, it's almost like the house that looks really good on the outside, but when you get in there, the plumbing is jacked up, the floor is jacked up, you got holes in the roof, nothing's working, electricity is jacked up, but the house on the outside looks real good. You know, it has all the outside aesthetics, you know, the brick looks good, and you know, you drive up to it, and you might have some greenery out in the yard. The boy, you open that front door, and the carpet is tore up, and all of that, that's what we have. That's what America looks like to me. So, no, yeah. You know, it looks good on the outside, but it's horrible on the inside. Yes, sir.
Yeah, so I want to kind of elaborate a little bit on the story about the teacher, just for the listening audience, so they can have some kind of context of what we're talking about. There's a story out, and you can Google it. I mean, it's covered in a lot of papers. I'm not sure how much national attention it's getting, but Gil Voigt, a teacher at a Fairfield freshman school, has 10 days to request a hearing before the school board or a referee after telling a black male student, "We do not need another black president," after the student said he would like to become president. Now, according to a report from the school's superintendent, the incident occurred on December 3rd, and several other students were in witnesses of this case. And this guy was previously disciplined in 08 for making racially insensitive comments and for using school technology improperly. So, as you pointed out, Gene, we have a long way to go. And so, again, the significance of President Obama's second term, it at least gives the idea that we are making steps forward in the right direction. Now, he has been probably on record the most disrespected president, at least in my lifetime, and I'm sure in the history of the United States. But again, because you have the majority of Americans not being of minority, actually got a chance to vote him into office, not only one term but two terms. That does give a hint of progress in our society, and I'm hopeful because of that. Although we still have in these pockets. Although, albeit many of them, pockets of racial rearing its ugly head across the United States, I think we're making progress. So I want to ask you then, with respect to his second inauguration, do you think this gives him more freedom to be a little bit more aggressive towards putting his political agenda forward?
Well, yes. I mean, it does. He has to still be strategic in how he manages it. I mean, he just can't come in with, you know, for lack of a better term, and to make it very clear, with both guns blazing and just, you know, knocking people out and, you know, getting rid of people and all of that, dismantling some things. I mean, he still has to be strategic about it. And I think, you know, what we saw a couple of days ago, as we talked about last week with the departments of the sentences of those people, those eight people that had those crack cocaine offenses. I think with that, I think with the continuing of some of his executive orders that he's done as it relates to voting rights, as it relates to immigration rights, as you know, I think some of those things are part of his overall national agenda. And I think as he moves into, I mean, I think that the telling sign would be what he says next month at his State of the Union address. And more importantly, though, the telling sign would be how aggressive he can be if he has the support that he needs to get it done. So he'll take some safe steps in 2014 to get people ready for the 2014 midterm election. He'll do the things that should generate his base, should generate the Democratic base to get those people out to vote, because we know that, you know, historically, black or white, people don't come out, and Democrats tend to do it less than come out during those midterm elections. But if we would not have amnesia and just remember what happened 4 years ago in 2010 when we did come out for a midterm election and who ended up in Congress. And I think his presidency in itself, from another historical perspective, has really been a great civics lesson to people on what happened in Washington. Because I think we were all living, well, not me because of my background, but we in the larger tech, we're living in some sort of bubble that the president had really all this power and the president made the law, the president did all this. When in reality, we, you know, what they taught us is the role of Congress doing, you know, what role does Congress play? And we've seen that Congress plays a vital role, and that if we don't have the right people in Congress, then the things that we find to be important are not going to happen because they're not going to vote for it. So it's going to be incumbent upon us to be available, to be out there, to still march, to still show up at the polls if we want his agenda to be even more aggressive. If we want him to really come out swinging and come out saying and doing things, he has to have some support to do it. And the only way he's going to get some of that support is by removing some of those people in Congress, because that's where his help is going to come from. So we have to help him make his agenda aggressive.
You know, that really puts a perspective on the old adage, all politics is local. And it really, and you mentioned about the civic lessons we've all learned over the course of the president's first and the start of his second term, is that the impact of the president is significant, but to a lesser degree of the Congress, especially when you don't have anybody in Congress acting on your behalf, right? Acting against your best interest. So the civic lesson that you were referring to, I'm hopeful that it's helped awaken America to the fact that we need to really be involved at all levels in politics, not just at the presidential election, as we have historically been involved in.
For sure. And I think that's where we have to do the most work in the field of advocacy, because all politics is local. And local means your school board, local means your mayor, local means your city council. All of those things have a direct impact on your day-to-day lives and the lives of your children. And local means your state representatives. I mean, you look at what happened in some of these states that turned Republican or may have had a Republican governor, but not necessarily a Republican House. And when they got the Republican House, the majority of them have done nothing to further advance their constituents. Everything has been about stopping something, whether that was the Affordable Care Act in terms of not taking the Medicaid expansion, whether it was limiting the rights of women as it relates to abortion or birth control, whether it was limiting voting rights for minorities. So this is what has come out in your local states and what's happening in states across the country. And so you're right. Our politics is local, and it doesn't just mean you go out and vote during the presidential election. You go out and vote whenever there's an election in your city. They could be voting on whether or not to increase your property tax, whether to do a sales tax, or whether to put a Walmart in your neighborhood. You need to go out and vote about that. So then you'll know what's happening. And if you don't know what's happening, then you can't really stand up and talk about what's not happening because you don't know what is happening. And so when you get those flyers in the mail and they're talking about the things that's coming up on the ballot, you need to read it. You know, that's your civic responsibility to read that and to be informed. Every local politician has a local phone number. Call them up and ask them, well, what is this about? How is this going to impact my neighborhood? And somebody has also got to be able to give you an answer to that. If they can't, then you all know that person is not looking out for you. And so, you know, we still have responsibilities that we have to do that I don't think we take enough of because we're so busy doing so many other things. But at the end of the day, I'm responsible for what I know. I'm responsible for ensuring that the people around me know certain things, but making sure we're feeding them the right information. And that's the beauty of this show, is that we have the ability to connect with so many people to give them different people information that they may have never had. But now you got to go out and do something with that information. So it's important that people recognize that when you're voting, not just for a president, but your state representatives, your U.S. senators and House representatives, your local people with your city council, who's in charge of your budget there? You know, why is it that you look up in some neighborhood and there's something new every day, and your neighborhood, you can't even get a stop sign painted over? So graffiti is everywhere, but so who's looking out for your neighborhood? And so, but if you don't put the right people in there that's concerned about your neighborhood, then that's what your neighborhood is going to look like. And that has nothing to do with the President of the United States.
I have to agree with you. So since we talked about race earlier, I want to talk a little bit about look back and talk about the significant issues that were in the news over the course of 2013, specifically around the George Zimmerman verdict, Paula Deen, and the debacle with the Duck Dynasty. And I want to look at it in the context, or look through the lens of the criminal justice system. I want to talk about it looking through the lens of the criminal justice system. We're going to take a quick break, and when we return, I want you to grade Eric Holder. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Cook Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Jima, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online driving people around me crazy, and I wanted to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend, and of course, my
need a new website? Haven't figured out your social media strategy? Are you finally ready to tweet, post, or blog? Well, look no further. Go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. We are the number one resource for small businesses and nonprofits. We're a full-service, interactive consulting firm specializing in social media marketing, web design, technology workshops, as well as leadership and management training. So go to TaylorMade101.com. That's TaylorMade101.com. Google me.
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. So, Jima, before the break, we talked a little bit about race in America, but I wanted to kind of now look at it through the lens of the criminal justice system, specifically around the fact that in the wake of the George Zimmerman's verdict, and Paula Deen went to trial, and then some racial connotations that came out of that, and of course, some of the things that were associated with the Doug Dynasty debacle. And so when you look at race in America, specifically around the criminal justice system, how would you grade Eric Holder and his handling of the criminal justice system with respect to Black America?
Well, I think Eric Holder has done an outstanding job, and I think it's only going to get better because, as we know, his time is connected to, you know, the president's term as well. So he is making a lasting impact as well to what's happening in our criminal justice system. And although it may look like he's moving a little slow for some, but I think what he's been able to accomplish over the period of time has been great, and I see him moving forward in so many different areas as well. So I think that's important. He's done a lot. He's done a lot.
So I'm gonna assume that you're giving him an A, B. What are you saying? He's a B person, an A person. What do you think?
He's an A person. I give him an A.
Okay.
I give him an A plus because he's attacked the hard issues. He's attacked voting rights. He's attacked the drug penalties. I mean the prison penalties for crack cocaine and changing those sentencing laws. So he's attacked a lot of things and things that have gone on for centuries untouched. And so I think he's done an outstanding job, and he's not afraid of the fight. I mean, here's a man who is not afraid of the fight. I mean, they've thrown everything at him as it relates to try to impeach him or not impeach him, but have him terminated or fired or whatever they were trying to do for Fast and Furious that didn't have nothing to do with him. They've called him also. I mean, he, too, has been ridiculed. I've never seen an attorney general called some of the names that he's been called. Much like we've never seen how they've treated the president, and it's simply because you're dealing with another Black man in power, and so that is a problem for the establishment that's never had to respect a person of color to this degree. You know, you've had to tolerate them because you know they may have been your supervisor, or they may have been your commander or something. But when you're talking about the president and the attorney general, the top two dogs, you know, in the United States, is in charge of the laws and how we're perceived around the world, this is who they see first. And so, you know, I'm giving him an A, because in the midst of it all, he stood up to him. He didn't back down, and he's even, you know, moving forward with the things that he's going to continue to fight for. And he said, as long as I'm Attorney General, this is not happening on my watch. And I believe him when he says that, as it relates to voting rights and dealing with the criminality of these drug offenses that, you know, people have amnesia about, you know, the Clinton era and, you know, how all that really happened under Clinton and it just came to fruition, you know, 20 years later. But he didn't want to start the ball rolling down the hill. So you're dealing with a ball. You know those cartoons back in the day where stuff rolled down here to keep bigger and bigger and bigger and bigger? That's what happened under Clinton's criminal justice system.
The critical takeaway that I want the listeners to really, really hone in on is the fact that, A, he's really not afraid of the fight, and B, he's really not afraid to tackle the hard issues that have plagued our society for many, many, many years. I mean, specifically around civil rights. I mean, who would think that we would be having this fight for civil rights and the Voting Rights Act in 2013? And then who would think that we would have to go through and enact some new legislation to reduce the punishment when it comes to crack cocaine and white powder cocaine possession? You know, those type of these inequalities that he's addressing head on. I mean, it's not like he's sending, you know, the spokespeople out there to talk on his behalf. He's out there front and center saying, hey, this is not right, and here's what I'm going to do about it. So I have to agree with you wholeheartedly about giving him an A+, because he's really took it to the people.
Mm-hmm.
So yep. I want to, since we're talking about the legislation, let's talk about the impact of DOMA, Defense of Marriage Act. What's the impact did that have in 2013, and what do you think the implications moving forward beyond 2013, 2014 and beyond?
Well, I think what it did was it kind of put the president, I mean, it wasn't an easy decision. I mean, it wasn't something that gave him a lot of points in the beginning. And so, you know, people have their own ideas based on their religious beliefs of what marriage is and what it's not, and who should get married and who shouldn't get married. And so all of that played itself out in the midst of that debate as well. And so for them to make the decision that we are no longer going to uphold this and fight for this, I think it spoke volumes to the type of person that he is, not the type of president, but the type of person that he is, that any form of discrimination is wrong. And so he took a stance on that.
You know, in addition to that, I want to say, at least in my estimation, that when President Obama had that interview on Good Morning America, and he kind of let it slip about his changing positions on marriage equality, or at least on same-sex marriages, things of that nature, it began a snowball effect. Mm-hmm. I mean, and then you have the Defense of Marriage Act, the law barring the federal government from recognizing same-sex marriages legalized by states, is unconstitutional, supported by the Supreme Court 5-4 this year. That was a major mm-hmm. step forward in equal rights for all in our society. So not only did you have the president really weighing in, setting the tone, leading in front by this issue, then you have, you know, all of these other states began to kind of, you know, to break down their barriers, and then all of a sudden you have the Supreme Court ruling on this issue, 5-4 decision, rendering that same-sex marriages, the way that these states were acting towards same-sex was unconstitutional. I think that was a significant impact of 2013. So in 2014 and beyond, though, do you think the prejudice will begin to come down with respect to same-sex couples?
No, I think it's just getting started and ramped up somewhat, in my opinion. I think the only way it's going to come down is if some of these people that are in elected positions are no longer there, because they carry such hate, in my opinion, in their hearts. And to believe what you believe is what you believe. And no one, I'm not here to stand on top of the table and try to convince you otherwise. But as I've always stated, you know, there's no big sin, there's no little sin. And at the end of the day, we're going to be judged on how we treat people. And so whoever you call your higher power, I'm sure there's something in that that speaks on how you treat people and how you take care of the least of these. I'm sure somewhere in the teachings of whatever you're following, that there's a lesson in there on how you treat people. But I think that's significant, and I think that's important moving forward, that we recognize that there's still much work to do, and that it's not going to all get done in 1 year. It's not going to be done probably, you know, in our lifetime, because we're talking about generational issues. But I think as people begin to understand what it means to be inclusive, what it means to respect somebody where they are, doesn't mean that I'm condoning it, doesn't mean that I'm okay with it, but I cannot be in the position to allow you to be mistreated because you have a lifestyle that's different from mine. Because not so long ago, me being a black female was a lifestyle that was different. So there were certain things I couldn't do, I wasn't supposed to do, I wasn't privy to do, because somebody thought I wasn't smart enough to do it because I was a woman, that I wasn't even a whole person because I was black. And so when we start allowing people's rights to be trampled on, just know that it's going to come back around to somebody else. And so if my brother isn't free, then I'm not free either.
Yeah, I really like that. And you know, I want to kind of now shift focus a little bit, because you kind of introduce religion in your response, and I want to talk a little bit about the Pope. There was a significant transition that took place this year with respect to the Catholic Church, and is primarily associated with the old Pope, or the Pope going out, kind of resigned, which really has never happened before. And you have this new Pope that comes in as very radical in some eyes, especially with respect to the Republican Party here in the United States, because they've really has taken the Pope to a new place in their eyes. And so, but I want to take a different perspective on looking at the transition. I want to know, when we come back from the break, do we think the new popes, at least all the things around the controversy in him and things he's doing, is this kind of generating a smokescreen to the issues of sex abuse in the church? You know, we don't talk about that anymore as if it never happened. And we really focus the new pope and his new radical behavior with respect to how traditional popes had acted in the past. So when we return from the break, I want to talk a little bit about that. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Be back in a moment.
Enterprises have joined forces with Google Inc. and Amazon.com. With this new partnership, our companies, TaylorMade Training and Consulting, Current Events, and Ask Gina, can now offer you the best deals 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Whether you're looking for discounted books for your book club or a very special gift for a friend, family member, or loved one, TaylorMade's Marketplace is where you should go first. Visit our website at TaylorMade101.com and click on Marketplace to get the best deals today.
Current
Current events with Patrick Cook is joining the fight with First Lady Michelle Obama to help feed hungry children and stop childhood obesity. During the school year, many children receive free and reduced price breakfast and lunch as a result of the school breakfast and national school lunch programs. However, when the last bell sounds, marking the end of the school year, for many, it marks the beginning of hunger that will plague them throughout the summer. Here at Current Events, we're going to fill that nutrition gap and make sure children can get the nutritious meals they need. To learn how you can help with this worthy cause, go to TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free. That's TaylorMade101.com and click on Hunger Free.
Thank you for your call. Let me read you a couple of my Twitter family, and then I'll have you respond, Dr. Hutchinson. But I want to read the first one from one of my best Twitter family members, Ask Jima. And Ask Jima says, Reverend Al, today is my birthday, and I'm sitting in Barnes & Noble Starbucks watching you online, driving people around me crazy. And I want to wave at her and the folks she's driving crazy and wish her a happy birthday on her 21st birthday. That's my friend. And of course, my
stay tuned. We'll be back with more of Current Events with Patrick Cook. Patrick Cook.
Washington, I'm Barbara Klein. Russian officials say at least 15 people were killed by a suicide bomber at a busy railway station in the south of the country. NPR's Corey Flintoff reports the attack highlights security concerns as Russia prepares to host the Winter Olympics.
The bomber struck in a crowd near a security checkpoint at the entrance to the train station in Volgograd, a city of about 1 million people in southern Russia. Unconfirmed reports say the bomber may have been a woman. If so, the attack would fit a pattern associated with radical Islamist groups from the nearby region of Dagestan. Islamist militants have threatened to attack the Winter Olympics in Sochi, about 400 miles from Volgograd. The International Olympic Committee says it's confident that Russia will be able to provide adequate security for the Games. Corey Flintoff, NPR News, Moscow.
Libya is defending the brief detention Friday of four U.S. military personnel. Officials there say the Americans were stopped after part of their convoy sped through a checkpoint in western Libya and were taken into custody when they were found to be armed. They were released several hours later. The U.S. says the Americans were apparently scoping out potential evacuation routes for U.S. diplomats in Tripoli. Former National Security Agency Director Michael Hayden is defending the NSA's phone surveillance program, leaked by former NSA contractor Edward Snowden. Hayden tells CBS's Face the Nation, while Americans should be concerned about surveillance, they should make decisions based on facts, not emotions.
What happens to that data? How often is that data touched? And the truth is, it's touched 200 to 300 times per year, and only based upon a reasonable, articulable suspicion that that number is affiliated with terrorism.
Meanwhile, a German magazine, Der Spiegel, is reporting the NSA has a hacker unit in which American spies intercept computer deliveries to steal data. Parts of northern New England are still in the dark after last weekend's ice storm, and at the same time, a major storm is expected to bring heavy snow tonight. Meanwhile, in Michigan, power is now restored for most homes and businesses, but not all, as Michigan Radio's Vincent Duffy reports.
Last weekend's ice storm left 500,000 Michiganders in the dark. Around-the-clock work by line crews, including help from other states, has much of the power restored. Most of those still without power are customers of Lansing's public utility. Angry customers showed up at a company press conference yesterday to complain about the slow repairs. The number of Lansing Board of Water and Light customers without power actually increased yesterday as melting ice from tree limbs damaged more power lines. But for most people who lost power in Michigan, the lights are back on, and officials say the majority of those still in the dark should have power by the end of today. For NPR News, I'm Vincent Duffy in Michigan.
This is NPR News. In France, the nation's highest court has approved a temporary 75% tax on incomes higher than $1.4 million. Individual incomes won't be taxed. That was ruled unconstitutional. So the government is making employers pay the high salaries liable, and that plan is being given the go-ahead. It's aimed at reducing France's budget deficit. Soccer clubs, businesses, and wealthy individuals condemn the tax. Polls show a large majority of the French population supports it. Delta Airlines says it's going to retire an aircraft that it debuted back in 1965. As NPR's Russell Lewis reports, Delta is grounding the DC-9 in the new year.
Delta first bought the DC-9 almost 50 years ago to replace some of its propeller aircraft. The twin-engine Douglas jet was once a workhorse of Delta's fleet. It operated more than 300 of them over the years and is now the world's only major airline to still be using them. In 1993, though, Delta removed the DC-9s from their inventory, but they showed up again when it merged with Northwest. Delta, like other airlines, is phasing out its older, smaller, and less fuel-efficient aircraft. The last DC-9 flights will be on January 6th. The final trip will be from Minneapolis to Atlanta. Russell Lewis, NPR News.
Organizers of the New Year's Eve celebration in New York City's Times Square announced today Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor will lead the final 60-second countdown to the new year. The Bronx native is tasked with pushing the ceremonial button that signals the annual descent of the giant crystal ball. I'm Barbara Klein, NPR News in Washington.
Support for NPR comes from...
Welcome back to Current Events with Patrick Cook. To join the conversation, the number to call is 323-580-5712. Once again, the number is 323-580-5712. I want to talk a little bit now about the Pope. Now, Pope Francis is really starting to get this name of what we would consider to be a good doer, a good deeder, or whatever you want to call him. But he's doing a lot of great things out there. And for some reason, it's stirring up a lot of controversy in the Republican Party. They want to call him names. They want to give him the Marxist term. And they want to say that he shouldn't be getting into politics. I mean, they want to really do a lot. And I'm not really sure why the tides have changed on the Pope. Jamie, what's going on now with the Republican Party not being so religious, if you will, truly being blasphemous almost?
Well, you got to remember that the Republicans have their own Bible. I don't think it's the Bible that everybody else reads, some of them. And so not understanding and not supporting a Pope who is speaking of taking care of the least of these and taking care of the poor and all the things that Jesus taught, and taking care of our children and sharing what you have, all those things he talked about, it speaks in direct conflict to what they're accustomed to doing, because although they talk about it, they don't do anything about it. And he is not just talking about it, but I believe he's trying to come up with some with some solutions, and he's making a statement directly to a group of people that have gotten rich off of the backs of the poor. And so it's not like he's just talking about something he doesn't have any knowledge about. He's speaking the truth, and some of those are Republicans, conservatives, whatever the term they want to use, Tea Party people, are having a difficult time with somebody of the faith, of the cloth, telling them that they need to do more with what they have and to take care of people. They're having a difficult time with that. And that's what it's all about. I mean, when they start name-calling you and calling you these names that are only meant to instroke fear and violence, like communists and Marxists and all those terms that you ask the average person on the street what it means, and they don't know. They just know it's supposed to be something bad, at least that's what they think, because it's never used in a good way, so it has to be something bad. So, but the average person doesn't know what those terms mean, and so when they hear, people on television making these statements, then they feel like it must be true.
Okay. So most people can agree then that the Pope is doing godly type things, right? I mean, he's really trying to bring some respect back to the church. So my question then is, you know, with all of these good things happening, have we lost sight of the sex abuse scandals in the church? And more importantly, not just talking about them, but have they done anything to heal the church and the people that were involved associated with the scandals? I mean, just because you moved ahead in this particular situation, I mean, you can speculate on why he resigned, and I'm sure there's a lot of conspiracy theories around that. But the fact remains is there was a lot of scandals, sex scandals, associated with the church prior to the new pope. So with all of these good deeds, do you think is really, really overshadowing the things that happened in the past?
I think what's important to note is that everything that people do, everything happens for a reason. Every behavior has a purpose. So, you know, you have to look at things with both focusing in on what's really happening. So to follow behind your point, the Pope comes in, and in the mastery of distraction, has said nothing about the sexual abuse issues that happened in the Catholic Church. But
right.
He's talked a lot about other social issues.
Right.
That has long been not talked about in the Catholic Church, or talked about in such a way that it was a shaming and a guilt thing. So on the one hand, what he's saying, you're glad to hear it, but on the other hand, it's like, hey, wait a minute, dude. You just came in on the heels of a major investigation,
right,
and we
right.
haven't said anything about that.
So, right. For me, for him to address that at some point has to happen, right? I mean, all the things he's doing is wonderful, and I think it is admirable for him to be able to do these things. And it's really bringing a sense of love, honor, respect back to the church. And I think you're probably seeing more in the increase in attendance because of what he's doing in our society, which is great. But we don't want to lose sight of what happened. I mean, shouldn't he at some point come out and address this social issue just like he's addressed the others?
Yes, I agree with you. I just don't think that it's going to happen anytime soon. I'm going to give them the benefit of the doubt and say maybe they're still doing some investigating and it's too soon to speak on it. So it's like you're dealing with a situation and you can't really talk about it just yet because you haven't gathered everything that you need. So let's just say that's what's happening, that he got the report from what was came out before the other pope stepped down. He has maybe instituted his own set of people to investigate, or he's just taking an extremely long time reviewing the report that was left for him. Who knows? But I was just trying to give him the benefit of the doubt.
Yeah,
he hasn't completely abandoned this major scandal of the Catholic Church. I don't think he's abandoned it, but he has definitely mastered the disguise and the distraction of it.
Yeah, we need to keep an eye on it because, I mean, you dealing in really the social sciences will understand how important it is to heal before you try to move on. And I'm not really getting a sense of healing that's involved. And I get a sense of moving on, and I see that every day in his actions and in the church in a larger body action. But I don't get a sense of healing. And that's what I'm looking for. So it's not just for him to go out and to be shameful with addressing and says, yeah, we messed up. But where is the sense of healing? How do we move forward without healing? So what does the social science say about just moving on without healing?
Right. Well, you can't. I mean, you cover it up, and eventually it's gonna rear its ugly head because you've never really dealt with the core of the issue. So he can bury his head in the sand on this issue and play like, oh, it's just going to all go away, or, oh, we've gotten rid of all those type of people, and not put anything in the system to help detect it again. And then something's going to happen, and then we're going to have this long, drawn-out case scenario of kids that may have been, you know, abused or whatever over a course of years. and the years might be even doing his whatever it's called.
Yeah. So I can't move on without at least closing the show out today, because we're almost out of time. It just goes so fast. But without talking about Eric Snowden. The fact that the NSA have been listening to our calls. And what's funny is that we've been joking about this for many moons, right? We always joke about, oh, they're listening to our calls. Are they changing the tape when we get a drop call, right? We say, is something happening with our phone call being dropped? We would joke about the NSA ran out of tape. They need to change the tape. Or there was something along those lines. But who would have thought this was actually happening? So, my question to you and to the listening audience out there is Eric Snowden a hero or is he a traitor by exposing this this particular NSA debacle?
Oh, that's a hard one, because I don't want to call him a traitor. He's definitely not a hero. He might be somewhere in the middle of that. I think there was a better way to get done what he was attempting to do. I don't think he had to go about it in such the way that he's done. I think he caused us some harm, maybe globally more than here locally. I mean, we've got to know that we're being monitored. I can't think that people didn't realize they were being tracked. I mean, everything is electronic. You know, if you don't, you know, people barely even take written checks anymore in most places. You can write a check, and it's going to electronically come out of your account at the same time. Whereas, you knew you used to could float a check for a couple of days. You can't float checks too many days because everything is coming out electronically. You have cameras up and everywhere where you're shopping, whether you're at the stoplight, you go through the light now, they catch you on the camera, they flash it, boom, you're getting a ticket in the mail. You're like, well, why not do that? So there's no way that we didn't know we were being tracked and we were being monitored. We didn't want to believe it, or we just thought it was certain types of people. What has happened is that people recognize that it's me too, and that's what they got a problem with. So it's okay if you're watching the black people come in Barney. You know, you stopping and frisking, you know, black people in the city of New York, or, you know, you're not giving, you know, you're not pulling over and giving the cab driver is passing by, you know, people of color while they walking down the street. But now that the used to be majority, because they're no longer majority, but they want to act like they still are, but think that, well, wait a minute, you listen to me too? Yeah, I'm listening to you too. I'm listening to everybody. Now it's a problem. Now it's something to talk about. Now it's an invasion of our privacy. And it's been an invasion of our privacy for years, you know, and it was no big deal, you know, to follow me in the store when I'm walking around, you know, Target. But now that you walk around Target and you realize the camera's on you too, now you got a problem with it. So, you know, this fake, oh my gosh, the government is listening to my conversation, is just so dramatic.
I think the issue
has been more what credibility or whatever it may have had with us on a global level in terms of who we're listening to that were allegedly our friends in the global world, not just here at home. I think that's the most damage it does.
Okay, so let's go with that. Let's go with that, and let's say that's rationale for why the people feel that way. Well, let me go one step further and then ask the question, how can a worker or employee, and we don't have to label Eric Snowden a hero or a traitor, let's not label anything for the moment. And let's say that we want ways to bring attention to issues that could potentially cause harm to people. For example, not just bodily harm, but financial harm, invasion of privacy harm, rights harm. So what he did was expose the NSA in such a way that says, man, maybe the NSA has gone too far. Right, which all the president responded with, well, maybe we need to look at our practices. I'm not saying, the president that is, not saying that what we were doing was wrong, but how we collect the data, the extent that we collect them, the time that we collect, we may need to investigate now. So if nothing else, what he did was create this space for now to evaluate the program. And so in everyday activities, and people see things probably not being, especially in the financial markets, not doing how does one bring issues to the attention of the masses then if they see something is wrong without being labeled a traitor or a hero?
Well, I think his actions when he left the country has a lot to do with him being labeled a traitor. I mean, when you're standing on what you believe in, you don't run from it. You don't go somewhere else, and it's like you throw the rock and hide your hand, you know. So if you finally believe in what you believe in, then you stay here and you take the consequences that come with it. I mean, it's just like last week when we talked about freedom of speech. Yeah, you have a right to say whatever you want to say, but you understand there's consequences with that right. You don't get to just, you know, say what you want to say, and then there's no consequences behind that. But that's the same thing with him. You say what you had to say, you stand by, and you stay here and you deal with the chips and let them fall where they may. But you don't go try to run to another country and get seek asylum and then parcel out all these little quote unquote secrets about America. I mean, that's a weak way out to me.
So the point is, he should bring it to someone's attention. You know, whatever channels that he may need to go through, but face the consequences too.
For sure.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I mean that pretty much wraps up our show today. We didn't get to go beyond that because of time, but I wanted to at least allow you to expand. Since this is the last show for the year, and we're going to move into 2014 to give your final thoughts.
I'm looking forward to 2014. I think where the country is headed is positive. I'm not looking through it in rose-colored glasses. I know it's going to take a lot of work from everybody. I think the president is, so I'm looking forward to what his State of the Union address will say come next month when he makes that. On a personal note, I'm looking forward to January 2nd when the University of Oklahoma takes on the University of Alabama in the Sugar Bowl. Roll Tide and Boomer Sooners all day long. So that's
Roll Tide, baby. You know the deal. Roll Tide.
Yeah, Boomer Sooner. And so that's something I'm looking forward to as well coming into 2014. But other than that, just ready for the next show. Our show next Sunday is going to be full of information. We have a young man that works closely with the White House on the rollout of the ACA. Mr. Anton Gunn will be on our show next Sunday. So people out there, listen in and get ready for the ride.
All righty. Well, I want to say that, again, Happy New Year to everyone out there. This is our last show for the end of the year. We're going to start out 2014 with a hot guest, one that's very, very knowledgeable about the Affordable Care Act. And we're going to take this Affordable Care Act thing into the new year, giving out as much information about the program as possible. But we also want to not just talk about ACA, but we want to talk a little bit about what the different types of health care plans are with or without the Affordable Care Act, right? You still need to know what an HMO or PPO is. You still need to know what the language around health care is, because the introduction of this legislation really introduces a whole new lexicon. I mean, people are going to need to know what deductibles are, co-pays, what PPOs, HMOs, and how the whole process works for insurance. And even as an individual that has had insurance for quite some time, I still have to go and continue to find information about that. And also, we want to talk more about the different types of metallic plans that are provided by the ACA. There's a bronze, there's a silver, there's a gold, there's other plans out there. And we want to create space for people to ask questions and be able to provide a space for people to be able to have a resource when it comes to finding more about the Affordable Care Act and other things in this particular area. So, again, Happy New Year, and a big shout-out to the Hertz family. Congratulations on another year of marriage. This is a great – they are so encouraging to me. I actually love this couple. I mean, they are just so wonderful.
He's talking about y'all.
And that is really,
y'all
really
so encouraging to him.
And so I really, really want to give a big shout out to them. But that's our show for today.
Yeah.
I would like to give a special thanks to my co-host. That's Jima Hill Cook. And you can follow her on Twitter. And that's at AskJima. That's AskJema. You're listening to Current Events with Patrick Cook. Now, don't forget to go out to our blog. That's TaylorMadeTalkRadio.blogspot.com. Again, that's TAILORMADE, Talk Radio, all one word, .blogspot.com. Remember, it is written, my people perish for the lack of knowledge. So stay engaged and stay informed and stay plugged in to Current Events with Patrick Cook. You're listening to the sounds of Joyce Spencer. Take us away, Joyce.